apologies for starting a little bit late. We had a closed session that took a little longer than we had anticipated. The board has directed staff, and there is nothing to report from closed session. May we please have the roll call?
Chairperson.
Here.
Mary Beth Bushy.
Here.
Michael Borstein.
Here.
Thomas Gaffney.
Here.
And Dean Giovanni.
Here.
And Dan Helmer.
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Next up is open period for public participation. This is the time for you, the members of the public, the audience here with us today, to speak to the board on anything not on tonight's agenda. We allow 2 minutes per speaker. And there are several of you, so if you want, just either stand up maybe up here so we can do this kind of in an orderly fashion.
Sure.
Fashion, and if whoever wants to be next, get ready to go after this gentleman. And would you mind stating your name?
Absolutely. My name is David Ernst. I'm an operator here at CMSA and have been for the past 11 years. So I'll read if that's okay. Respected members of the Board of Commissioners, I stand before you today to respectfully ask that you reconsider CMSA's position regarding the early termination of your agreement with your employees to continue the 8% special compensation to CalPERS, commonly referred to as EPMC. I am sure you are fully briefed on the history and status of this issue, but please allow me to present a short summary. During the contract negotiations in the spring of 2014, the represented members were presented a proposal from the Board of Commissioners to eliminate the EPMC in June of 2018. This proposal was attached to significant concessions in other areas, most notably healthcare contributions and sick leave accruals. In July of 2014, the represented employees and CMSA agreed to a 6-year contract with the board's original EPMC elimination schedule unchanged. Immediately after the contract was ratified, in July 2014, each employee was provided with an individual comprehensive breakdown of not only their base salary, but the additional calculated pensionable salary reported to CalPERS. It should come as no surprise that employees nearing retirement age would use CMSA's calculations and the contract's timeline for future planning. In April of this year, SEIU was informed that CalPERS had reviewed our MOU and issued a guidance letter suggesting that the EPMC essentially ended in July of 2016, and that CMSA concurred with this suggestion. It is important to note that this decision will have little to no impact on the majority of employees. However, the impact on your most senior, loyal, and long-term employees is substantial. These employees have worked for you for 26 to 31 years and are being told literally in the last minutes of their careers, and some even now in retirement, sorry about the 8% pay cut. These employees have no appeal rights with CalPERS. CalPERS merely identified a possible accounting error on CMSA's part. Due to CMSA's agreement with this finding, CalPERS considers the matter closed. Therefore, no determination letter will be issued, and subsequently there is nothing for an employee to appeal. CalPERS has stated both in a conference call with CMSA and during a follow-up call from an employee that they are more than willing to work with agencies to modify contract language that not only fulfills the obligations with employees, but also complies with CalPERS when these types of situations arise.
Mr. Ernst, that's over 2 minutes. Would you mind just finish? I don't want to cut you off too abruptly. Finish your thought. And
I have just a couple more paragraphs, but I'll pass on if you prefer.
If you wouldn't mind.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry, we try
that's
to
okay.
Keep it fair, and everybody gets the same amount of time. Okay. Thank you. You mind stating your name?
Yeah, Nicholas Gaunt.
Thank you.
SEIU has presented the board with a minor change in the contract language that would allow CMSA to keep its obligations to its most loyal employees and comply with CalPERS statutes. I respectfully ask that you reconsider our original proposal to protect past and future retirees or identify one or more of the CalPERS officially recognized areas of pensionable compensation, any of which would allow you to keep CMSA's original calculation intact and fulfill the promise to the affected employees who are at the end of their working careers. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak? No?
No.
Okay. Oh. One?
No.
No? Okay.
Yes. All right.
All right.
We'll leave you to your meeting. Thank you.
Great. Thank you all for coming.
Wait, yes. Wait, before you leave, I'm the longest serving member of the board, so I want to extend to you my thanks for your service. And it's great that you, it's unfortunate that we've had this sort of unusual issue that has brought you here, but it's wonderful to see all of you, and it's a pleasure. You know, we read all about all the great things that you do, and it's really nice to see the people that, the men and women that are doing that hard work every day. So thank you for coming out. We can't take any action on your issue tonight, but we really appreciate you coming and sharing your views with us and for all the hard work you do every day. So well, thank you.
Thank you for that, too. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Well stated, Mayor. Mm-hmm. Thank you for saying that. Okay. I mean, they all don't want to stay for the board meeting.
Mark, what happened? Are you supposed to watch your presentation?
Okay. Moving on to the consent calendar. The purpose of the consent calendar is to pass routine items in one motion. Any member of the public, staff, or the board may pull an item if they would like to discuss it. Would anybody like to pull anything? If not, I will entertain a motion for consent calendar items A through L.
I motion we move B.
Mary Beth Beechick.
Okay,
you want a second?
That's okay. I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? No? Thank you. Agenda item 9, procurement of a data management system and a laboratory information management system.
Good evening, Board of Commissioners.
Sure.
You have to be introduced.
So, CMSA, you know, the regional, you know, facilities and our contracts with, you know, the various districts, you know, for patrols in Greece and all the regulatory programs and operating, you know, off-site assets and pump stations and things, you know, there's just a lot of data and information that we have to acquire, that we have to track, monitor, manage, and we use a lot of that to produce various reports for the Regional Water Board, reports for the agenda packet, and internal reports to help, you know, operations. So we've talked about some of these, you know, data management systems in the past, like our computerized maintenance management system for all of the preventative, corrective, and predictive maintenance here, and tracks our inventory, the work history, you know, for all the different assets and equipment. And we talked a little bit about our process control system, also a SCADA system that operates and monitors the treatment plant and offsite facilities. And we also have some, you know, within operations group, we have some spreadsheet-based, you know, kind of styled data tracking type systems where information from SCADA is input into spreadsheets and that's used to generate, you know, reports and other information for staff to use. And then we have a lot of laboratory type data from all the samples that we have to collect and analyze for process control and also for regulatory reporting. And all that's managed by spreadsheets. So one thing that we, you know, started talking about once we, once our prior environmental service manager left, we learned about how some of the data was managed a little more closely, intimately, by talking with the staff in the department. We figured that there's probably some better ways to manage that data within the laboratory, and that expanded to better ways to just track and manage just process control data. And then through that reorganization with the technical services group, we created a new position called lab director, had a real successful recruitment, and that's we're here from formerly from Napa Sanitary District, and one of his, you know, one of the initial assignments for Mark was to take a look at how the data is managed in the laboratory. And Mark had done that, and he did, you know, internal needs assessment with stakeholders, had a lot of good ideas, and one thing was that you guys need a database-type management system, not spreadsheets. And Mark has a lot of experience with NapaSAN, with, you know, researching different databases for process data and for laboratory data, going through those selection processes, you know, implementing them and operating with them and integrating them together. So we're real lucky that Mark has all that great experience. So with that, because that's about all I know, is I'll turn over the presentation to Mark. And thanks for coming, Mark.
Thank you for the presentation. Thank you for that introduction, Jason.
Should we turn the
Did you turn off the just now?
No. Oh, you might have turned it off.
Okay. It was all.
It was on.
It was on.
It was on. Yep. Blank. Okay. Yeah.
It's all right. I'll turn it on in the meantime. As Jason has already indicated, I was tasked at the beginning of this year, as I came in as the lab director, to assess our data management system and improvements that we could potentially make. And as part of the process, I went to the various departments, the laboratory department, operations department, and looked at how we were operating our data. Where was it going? How was it trending? How do we get data from the reports that I generate in the lab to what Jason would need for his reports and so forth, and basically what you would need for your reports. And so how do we get that information from one place to the next? As part of that, we discovered that we had three primary areas that data was being housed. One was in the SCADA system, which is the operational system that runs a facility. It's basically a database that houses the analytical data from the instrumentation that is located throughout the plant, as well as it provides alarms for the facility, so that way there we go, it's up and about. So that way we could we get data out of that system through Excel spreadsheets from flow meters and inline instrumentation. We also have the operations Excel systems that house the facility observation and analysis information that they collect throughout the every single day, and field data that they're pulling as they do their rounds out in the field. And then the lab, we collect samples and we bring it into the lab and we run analytical tests on it. And we take information that we collect and we put it into Excel databases, so that way we can trend things like pH and dissolved oxygen and so forth. And so we house Excel spreadsheets in the lab as well too. At the end of the month and throughout the weeks and so forth, we compile the data into reports for you all, as well as for regulatory agencies as well too out there. And so it requires a lot of data entry. But some of the improvements that we saw that we could potentially implement here was, one of the problems that we were seeing was single user access. Well, if I'm in a database, my colleague couldn't get into that database as well too, or copying and pasting. So I'd be entering in data for my Excel spreadsheet, but then Chris Fenton in operations needed the same data in his spreadsheet. So we would have to basically put data into two different locations. So these were the types of improvements that we were looking for and going, well, what...
Did we get in a time warp? Is it 1985?
So, yeah, these were improvements that we wanted to see, and there's definitely options out there.
Yeah.
But as we were going down the road, we noticed that there's definitely different requirements. The facility needs a certain type of data that was housed in certain specific software applications, whereas the laboratory requirements are more specific to laboratory requirements. Labs are concerned with analytical requirements, methods, control criteria, and so forth, whereas facilities are focused on removal efficiencies and how the process trends occurring. So we, as we investigated it, we came across a potential solution, one in which a WIMS and LIMS database could interface across one another, where it could provide the data in a single location that was accessible to operations department, to Jason if he wanted to get to the information, to me in the lab, and it would automatically interface between these two systems. It also had a lot of other opportunities that would fix those improvements that we were looking to address, a single user access, the copying and pasting. We wanted to maximize our staffing opportunities rather than sitting down and data entering everything. We did it in one location. It would be available to everyone. Because we noted that there were two different types of softwares we needed, one for the facility and one for the lab, we put two RFPs together, and we reached out to four individual vendors who were interested in these to provide proposals. From these four vendors for these two different systems, two came to the top that we are recommending to you tonight, the Hawk Company and Promium. They are two systems that are robust and are fit within the proposal, the RFP that we have put out as well too in all aspects. So before you tonight is the Hawk WIMS database. This system here provides individual dashboards for the specific user. So in other words, when data gets entered in the lab, it would automatically be available to a user in whatever format they wanted it in. If Jason wanted to monitor regulatory compliance of the facility, he could have a specific dashboard that would put everything together in the format that he wanted to see it in. Whereas for me, I might want to focus on regulatory compliance, and so I'm looking at a different set of parameters. Chris might want to look at more the operations of the facility, so he would have a different dashboard all set up. It would also provide the ability to automate some of the regulatory reporting that we were putting together in Excel spreadsheets and so forth that we would have to manipulate to put up into the state CWIX database. This would all be automated through the Hawk WIMS system. Also a part of this procurement that's before you tonight is the Promium Element system. It is an analytical database, and it also, not only will it interface across with the existing SCADA system and potential Hawk WIMS system, but it will also interface with instrumentation in the lab. One of the things that we do in the lab is, say we run a pH sample. When we collect the pH sample, we write the number down on a log sheet and then take that log sheet to a computer and enter it in. This system, when it's connected to the database, the data that comes out of that respective meter goes automatically into the system. So there's no potential for transcription error. Plus, it's maximizing my staff's performance out there because they don't have to worry about entering that in the various locations. Plus, also, it provides us the existing regulatory requirements and potential future requirements. We would be able to meet those requirements that are laid before us as well, too. So I know you have all had a long night already, and I want to keep this as short as possible tonight. Board of Commissioners, I would like to request the authorization for the procurement of the Hawk Water Data Management System for $51,781 and to authorize the procurement of the Promium Element Laboratory Information Management System for $78,856. If you have any questions at this time, I can answer them as best I can. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
How is this all going to be hosted?
It will reside on our servers. It will be protected behind our firewall. It is a SQL Server program. So it would be separated from the SCADA system. So SCADA would be able to put out the information as needed, and we would be integrated into the system. So it would be separate from the SCADA system, but on a server.
And you can only access it here?
No, you would be able to access it off-site, but only through permitted portals.
Okay, so it's going to be highly secure?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, but not nearly as fast as the cloud and accessible, is it?
It's not going to be like the cloud, no.
It's not going to be like the cloud.
No.
One thing that I have noticed, when you fall far behind,
yes.
You've got to catapult yourself way ahead.
Yeah.
This doesn't strike me as being way ahead.
Both the pros and cons of housing it on the cloud base has some pitfalls as far as trying to get the information from, say, our SCADA system into the HawkWind system, because we would have to open up certain portals that, quite candidly, we don't feel are safe at this time to be able to put that information in a cloud-based system.
Okay.
And from my experience, the majority of wastewater facilities prefer to host their own data management systems at their location rather than cloud-based at this time.
And you're going to be able to get into all of this information so that you can do all the data analysis. You know, what is the thing? I love
yes,
big
ma'am.
Data and it never lies and all that kind of stuff. So you're going to be able to do that and really get into the nooks and crannies and do serious trend analysis. And
yes. And the benefit to both of these systems is that down the road, if we feel that we need to move over to a cloud-based system, we could take the existing database and import it into the cloud-based database. Yes, sir.
Would that require are updates and maintenance of these systems built into the product?
Yes, it is. One of the driving factors for the Promium Element Lab system was that it requires, they usually do quite robust updates, usually once to twice a year at a minimum. And so when that occurs, we have a maintenance fee associated with it, and it is about $3,500 a year, which would keep the system up to date every year.
Are either of these systems looking to become software as a service?
Sorry, can you ask that question one more time?
Rather than us having buying software, are either of these systems available in the future, or are they thinking about moving to a software as a service product?
They have not.
Where they do all the updates and all the maintenance.
They would do all the updates. When I say updates and maintenance, they provide all the updates and maintenance. You just click a button and it will update the system automatically. You don't have to do any of the updates yourself. It's just a matter of basically requesting the update package to be downloaded so it can be uploaded into the server.
So the difference between this and them doing everything as a service is mainly use or not of the cloud at this time?
Yes.
And that would be a seamless change if that...
Yes, we would be able to transition the database up to the cloud if we needed to, so it could be hosted on the cloud.
By these same service providers?
Yes, I can double-check on that to confirm that.
Thanks.
I'd like to ask about training and implementation. You have used the HOCT?
I have used both of these systems,
oh, yeah.
Ma'am.
Okay.
I have 13 years of experience with the HawkWinds database with NapaSAN. I do know Nevada uses the HawkWinds as well, too. I've trained operators and lab staff on the system. I've done the back-end maintenance on the system. Promium Element, I implemented and installed and brought in the Promium Element system at Napa Sanitation District. And one of their selling factors is that they are one of the high areas of expertise is in the wastewater field, and their maintenance fee associated with their upgrades and updates are reasonable compared to other procurements out there. There are a lot, you can get expensive LIM systems out there.
And are they both American companies?
One is located out of Washington, and the other one, Hawk, is located out of Colorado.
Thank you.
And so you're going to train a lot of our staff. Is that what's going to happen?
Yeah, so there is an implementation. Some of the I'm a chemist by trade, so some of the software expertise I don't have. We will require somebody as part of this package. They will come in and help me install the package. And there will still need to be a backbone that will need to be created, some of the variables and so forth. I will be doing that with Dave Ernst, who you just met. Then we will be training staff. So some of the major training will actually be weighted upon myself and Dave Ernst, but we will actually be cutting down some of that training because of my experience with both of these products.
So Mark, you'd mentioned to me that these prices include the full suite of training, right?
Yes.
Because you're experienced, you'll be providing some training, so that's the actual cost for the procurement in the end will be less than these.
Yes, you pay for the training as you go along. So if you don't need as much training, you don't have to charge as much. Yes, sir.
Does this include asset management functions?
No, it does not.
We have a separate program with database for asset management.
You already have that implemented?
Yeah, it's an asset management program called NextGen, but it has a lot of modules, and the main one is the computerized maintenance management system. Mm. And that's really used exclusively here and very effectively also.
Okay. So
you can go buy some time, I'll show it to you.
Okay.
Well, I won't show it to you, all the staff will show it to you. But it's
very good.
They work together.
As far as the Promium system, it does work. The Hawk Water Data Management System is focused more on process analysis and regulatory reporting, whereas the element system is lab. So it will take all of the instrumentation, the assets that we have in the lab, it will put it into the system, and then we will have it available to import into our asset management software. So it does work with asset management software.
Yeah, we're surprised, some of us, when we learned, because we always heard we had a LIM system in the laboratory. So we thought, that's great. So we heard that, and we thought we had one. And it wasn't until last October that some of us learned that it was an Excel-based system, which is, as you all know, a lot different than a database system.
Yes. Great. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
So that's the staff recommendation. Is Mark has a slide here. This was a major project for in the capital program this year. It's also a strategic action in the agency's fiscal year 18 business plan.
Well, the forest is the issue of whether to authorize the procurement of these two systems.
I move that we authorize the procurement of the Hatch Water Data Management System for $51,781 and the Promium Element Laboratory Information Management System for $78,856, propelling us into the 2017-18. And in the future.
Based on the compelling staff analysis, I second that.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Unanimous. Thank you very much.
Thank
you. By the way, the reason I asked if they were American companies is since I've learned more about Kaspersky Labs that would advertise on NPR. They're out of Russia.
They're a Russian company.
And they do security programs for your PCs. Mm. Yeah. So thank you for all your research and your terrific presentation. Okay, moving on. Agenda item 10, appointment of CMSA representatives to the North Bay Watershed Association's Board of Directors. Jason?
Okay, so this is an item that was kind of postponed from the July meeting when the board normally appoints, its officers and members to the Standing Finance Committee and to the North Bay Watershed Board. And as I know in the staff report, it was postponed because Commissioner Hilmer wasn't at the meeting, neither was Alternate Commissioner DiGiovanni. So we figured, well, let's hold off until they're at the meeting, and then also Commissioner Borstein could learn if he'd be appointed to the North Bay Watershed Board by the Ross Valley Board, his appointing agency to CMSA. So this is before the board for consideration of appointment of a representative to sit on the board and an alternate. And I'm the board's alternate right now, and I'm very happy to continue serving as alternate if you'd like me to.
I can just make a statement. I love being on that board. It is, what they're doing is incredible. The information they bring to their board meetings, which are the first Friday of every month, from 9:30 to 10:30, and it usually switches between Novato and Petaluma. And it's just the amount of information about the North Bay watershed is really quite incredible. Anyway, the reason I'm moving is to wanting to represent the Ross Valley Sanitary District there is our representative from the Ross Valley Sanitary District has a different idea than I do about how to report back about what's happening at the North Bay Watershed Association, and so I chose to still represent, to be on the North Bay Watershed, but through Ross Valley, and I can't be on both. But I can't tell you how much I highly recommend doing it, and especially if you have Jason as a backup in case you can't make it there. It's a wealth of information that's not only important, but really, really, really interesting.
But I would say, no matter who takes it for CMSA, you encourage them to video record their meetings so that it could be shared with the wider community. I think that would be
They recently did that on one of the speakers. Yes, I will suggest that be the case.
Thank you. All right, let's take volunteers first. I did it for a short period of time. It was very interesting. Who wants to take it?
I have a timing conflict. I have a class that goes until 9, and then my History Society has the first Friday lecture series at 11, so I can't do it.
It's a work day for me.
Work day for me.
I work at home, but I guess I'm struggling to come up with that answer of not being able to do it, but I am very busy.
Thank you, Dean.
Well, I could be the board's representative. I've served in that capacity in the past. Mm-hmm. There are staff from member agency that serve on the board. It's not just elected representatives.
I tell you what, I'll take it.
Okay.
But I can't guarantee I can go every time because I've got a lot I'm juggling right now.
Okay.
So.
You just let me know and I'll attend.
Okay.
In your place.
Okay, great. Another board.
I apologize for putting the board in this position, but I think it's really important that we are represented on the Ross Valley, and I know that we'll get well represented here.
I'll nominate Director First, a CMSA representative to the North Bay Watershed Association's Board of Directors.
Second. And Jason as the alternate.
And G.N. Dow as the alternate.
That's all right with you, Mary Beth?
It's all right with
me. Okay. All in favor? Was that unanimous?
Yeah.
Even I voted 100%. For that one. Right.
Okay.
Thank you, Diane, for taking this.
Thank you.
All right. Number 11. Renewable Energy Expansion Program, Clean Water State Revolving Fund Financial Assistance Agreement.
Okay, thank you, Chair First. So this is more of really an update for you. So remember, July of last year, we had a presentation from staff and our energy consultant, Michael Brown, about the status of our interconnection agreement project. And there's a lot of different tasks associated with that project. And at the end of that discussion, the board suggested that the agency, you know, look into applying for a Clean Water State Revolving Fund loan for the project and other agency projects. So we received the direction and we talked about that internally. Engineering staff, you know, researched the different categories that were, you know, eligible for SRF loans, and one that kind of matched, you know, the interconnection project and various tasks within our master plan was called the Green Project Reserve Program. So we did the research, we download the application. We'd interface with State Water Board staff about it just to confirm that what we were proposing for a plan of study would be acceptable to them and meet the requirements within that that particular category. And then we came back to the board in September of 2016 with a recommendation that you authorize us to apply for the SRF grant under that program for what we called the Renewable Energy Expansion Program, which is a combination of, you know, interconnection agreement tasks as well as master plan tasks. And that was granted, and part of that was passing a resolution, you know, authorizing staff to sign the application and various other, you know, programmatic documents from the State Water Board for the SRF loan. So then it moved pretty slow after we sent the application in. We did receive notification at the end of September that they received the application and they accepted it. Then every couple months, you know, every few weeks we were checking in with the Water Board staff in the Clean Water Grant Program, you know, division, getting updates from them. And a lot of times there wasn't much to update us on. And I told the board about that. Then eventually in January, I think I reported to you that I was at a CASA conference and I was talking with some of my colleagues who applied for the same SRF loans in that program, and they are a little envious that our application was accepted, that we are getting, you know, responsive, you know, communications from the Water Board, and they submitted an application, you know, before us. So we thought, wow, even this process is slow, it looks pretty good compared to a lot of our other colleagues and their application packets. So we weren't as concerned. Then it went through, you know, it got approved by the project manager. Then it went through a series of more approvals at higher levels until finally the finance director of that division approved it. And we were informed that it was approved probably in the June timeframe. Then they prepared the draft agreement. They sent that to us. You know, our staff looked at it. Our energy consultant looked at it. We thought it looked pretty good. And then they prepared the final draft agreement for execution. So I'm authorized under the resolution the board adopted last year to sign that. But I thought, I talked with the chair first, I thought it would be good to brief the board, give an update on this, and see if you had any other direction regarding, you know, signing the agreement. So the way it works is this is a Green Project Reserve planning grant. So there's planning grants and there's construction grants. And it has a 75% forgiveness. So it's essentially, you know, a grant of 75% and then a loan for the 25%. So that's our matching fund. So, and in the agreement, it says that all of our costs and expenses from, I think, October 16th in 2016 are reimbursable. So that was great news. And so if it's fine with the board, I'll go ahead and just sign this agreement. Counsel Govey has, earlier this evening, he signed the legal opinion, general counsel opinion letter. He signed that. Then we could, you know, transmit that to the State Water Board. Once they execute it, we can start looking for reimbursement for our costs from October, you know, 16th or so until current and into the future. So that's great news. And there's a series of attachments to the staff reports. One is the letter from the State Water Board notifying us of receiving the loan. Then the general counsel opinion letter, and then an exhibit from the agreement that shows the 13 different tasks that we prepared in the plan of study. And the cost estimates for those tasks. And a lot of those costs are, you know, right from the interconnection project agreement, you know, task allowance, or from the facility master plan. Then we include some additional funds in each of those tasks just for reimbursement of staff time associated with administering those activities. So with that, I can answer any questions, or I would just plan on going and signing this tomorrow.
So now go after construction SRF loan. The construction project. Can we get one for that?
If we have a project that we're going to build, we could apply for that.
Okay.
Dean.
So this is really, 75% of this really isn't allowance-free money?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's part of the loan program, but they call it forgiveness. Okay. So it's just, it turns into a grant. Yeah.
And the loan amount is so little that Jason is just planning to pay cash. In other words, it's
$167,000 over 20 years, because most of the monies that are in these 13 tasks here, they're either already in the capital program and we spent them on interconnection agreement work, which is nearly wrapped up, or they're part of the facilities master plan, you know the task there, or they're in the operating budget for staff time. So a lot of the money is already there. So it's up to a $500,000 grant, which is great. Then we save that money on the capital side, And of the $127,000, we could either have a 20-year loan for that, or we could just use the money in the capital program that was allocated for the task and just pay it off. Don't know exactly how that works yet, but that's kind of, you know, conceptually the plan.
But Jason, is there a program for the construction cost too, do you think?
Well, there is. Oh, yeah, under the Clean Project Reserve. So once we finish this, and if, say there's one of the projects expanding the organic waste receiving facility, or looking at, you know, putting in a new cogen engine to utilize additional future biogas, those would qualify under the same program, and we could complete a construction project. I don't know all of the documents you have to have in place before you can file the application. A lot of times you have to have a financing plan in place. You have to have, you know, a CEQA document as applicable, you know, already adopted by the board. You have to be in design at some level. So there's various criteria that we have to meet, and I'm not familiar with those on the construction grant side.
Usually the second state revolving fund loan is much easier to get than the first one.
This seems pretty easy.
Good. Well, Jason, as he said, already has authorization to do this. Yep. This was really just more informational and just to make sure nobody had any questions or concerns. More. Okay.
I'll move
excellent.
Staff recommendation.
Well, we don't need to vote. It's informational.
We're informed.
Thank you.
We put ourselves
informed. I take it back.
All right. We are informed. Excellent.
Great. But you're willing to accept a grant.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the limit on cogen capacity with the new PG&E limits?
So with our new interconnection agreement, we can have a 750 kilowatt cogen engine. So they looked at the existing capacity, and that's what they performed the initial study or the initial review and the supplemental review on is the size of that engine.
What excess are you able to put out on the grid?
We can put out up to 750.
That's it.
Your export.
Yeah.
You can export 750, and you can meet 100% of your own load, presumably.
Yeah. So the way it would probably work is, like, for example, our load right now, say, is maybe up about 625. So once we'll get to a point, hopefully in the near future, where we're bringing enough organics to where energy self-sufficient, and then we can bring in more, and then we could deliver the balance up to the cogen output. At some point in the future, if, you know, we want to expand the organic waste program even further, we'd have to, one, do some design and capital work on the facility so it could handle receiving more facilities. We have plenty of digester capacity, but we'll be maxed out on the cogen capacity. So then the question is, okay, what do we do with that additional, you know, future biogas? And, you know, we could you know, clean that up a little further, moving the carbon dioxide from it, and that could be a biomethane transportation fuel. So that's an option that some agencies are pursuing or have constructed or using. Or it's have additional energy generation here at the agency and sell the power. So those are kind of the two options. There's another option of, you know, cleaning the gas as if you were going to use as a vehicle fuel, but you would inject that into, you know, the grid, the pipeline. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, my understanding right now that PG&E is not really, you know, interested in that, and they're making it pretty difficult for agencies to pursue that. That I don't think there's any in the PG&E service area that actually sending, you know, digester gas cleaned up to the biomethane standard into the system. I think there's some of that's happening down in Southern California, in Southern California Edison's service area. But
what's this power export is limited to 25% of CMSA demand since we received PG&E funding for our 205.
Pardon me?
Well, in your business report, you said power export is limited to 25% of CMSA's demand since we received PG&E funding for the 2005 cogen.
Oh, so that's my verbal report.
I know, but yeah, does that mean that's limiting us in the future?
Well, that's in the agreement with Marine Clean Energy right now. Yeah, so there, you know, we're still kind of working on the details of that agreement.
Okay.
But there's the standard language in their agreement, and this might be, you know, a Public Utilities Commission, you know, regulation. And what that agreement says right now is if you received any self-generation program incentive grants, you're not eligible. So we received those grants for the existing engine back in 2005, 2006. Marine Clean Energy said, well, why don't you just go ahead and ask your legal counsel to revise that with that language there, that you can't exceed 25% exporting of your demand. So right now, so if we're at 625, 750 is a little less than, what, 25%. So we're okay with the current interconnection agreement and the current generator.
Yeah.
So like if we wanted to say put in a 1 megawatt generator next to, in the empty bay next to the 750 kilowatt generator, and we want to expand that program, then we'd have to have further discussions with, you know, whoever's buying our power. But that's just, you know, that we had that agreement from our contract attorney, and he's revised the language, and he had an energy, you know, attorney that specializes in energy procurement and programs look at it, and that's something that we haven't looked too closely yet because there's not a really tight time frame to get that agreement, you know, wrapped up.
But there could come a day where we're generating more than we can sell.
More than we use.
Well, more than, are we constrained from... Well, is there a limit on what we can sell beyond what we're using?
The limit is going to be based on the output of the cogen engine and also the interconnection agreement limitations with PG&E.
So is that the 25%?
Well, the 25% is a potential restriction in the power sale agreement with Marine Clean Energy.
I see. But if we were producing more than we could sell or use...
More than we could, if we were producing 50% more than we could use, we would have a problem, right?
Well, like say, for example, with the existing systems we have, if we found some ways to increase our energy efficiency to where maybe we're down to 400 kilowatt demand and the engine's 750, with that provision, we couldn't export above, you know, what?
100.
500.
Under the grid.
Right. Under the grid, yeah. That's we're not going to get down that low to 400. So in the current system, that provision is okay, but we have to think about that a little more, talk to MC about that, see, figure out from them why do they have that, and where's the regulations that, you know, govern that provision, because they weren't quite sure of it. The project manager, he wasn't quite sure where that came from. There's a lot more research we have to do on that. But I put that in the verbal report just to let you know that we're moving forward with the agreement with MCE. It's been reviewed by legal counsel, but we still have some, you know, some work to do on that.
Yeah, because the 25%, your interconnection agreement is with PG&E.
Yeah.
And once you get an export meter, you've got an export meter.
That's right.
You know, and you've just got to deal with the constraints of the equipment. But other than that... Well,
they used to limit what you
yeah,
put
but
on
you
the
do grid. Have a limit. It says right there.
But out of the interconnection agreement, I don't.
It's separate. Yeah, that's separate. That's in the power sale agreement. So that's what's.
That's the MCE. That's different from the interconnection.
That's correct. Agreement. That's right.
And for some reason, MCE is only feels that it can purchase up to 25%.
More than demand. Yeah.
More than demand. I am not aware of any source.
Is MCE a tax exempt agency? It could be that. And we had a taxable entity, PG&E, financing a project, and then you can't have a tax-exempt agency. Like, you know, you can't use tax-exempt money to make money for a taxable. And it might be tax law.
That's I have no idea. I know it's not public utility law that creates it.
Before we bring, you know, a draft MCE agreement to the board, we'll have done a lot more research about this topic.
I was just briefing you that
the agreement, you know, development process is going forward.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's get back to our agenda here.
Okay. Agenda item 12, agency responses to the Marin County Civil Grand Jury Report, the budget squeeze.
Okay. So the 2016-17 Grand Jury published a lot of reports in the springtime. And we received, you know, a few of the reports in the end of May, early June, and two of the reports we had to respond to. That was, one was the pension report, and the second one was the retiree health benefit report, or OPEB benefits. So we brought both those reports, you know, to the board at the June meeting and asked how you would like the agency to respond to those. And your preference was formation of an ad hoc committee to work with staff to prepare draft responses and then bring those responses to the board tonight at this meeting for review, consideration, approval for editing, or however you wanted to handle those. We do have a deadline of submitting, you know, our agency responses to the four-person, the presiding judge, by September 30th. And that was an extension granted by the four-person, you know, prior to the June meeting. So I prepared some initial draft responses. I met with the committee, which was Commissioners, you know, Gaffney and Borstein and Giovanni. I always have a tough time with Giovanni. And we had a really great conversation, and there was some good, you know, suggested changes, and we think the responses are pretty good. So before the board tonight, as two separate agenda items, are the agency's, you know, proposed, or the ad hoc committee's proposed responses for the board's consideration. First is on the budget squeeze report. So you see, we were supposed to, we're required to respond to recommendations 3, 4, and 8. And there's a detailed response, you know, in the attachment to the staff reports. We can, I or the committee could answer any questions you may have on those. You see that we've implemented most of the recommendation, or we're already in compliance with most of the recommendations, but there's a few little, you know, tweaks we have to make. And those are kind of discussed in the on page 2 of the staff report.
So we're really doing just about everything in R3 and R4. And we have to do R8 is impossible for us, frankly. We've got to change PERPA, and we've got to change PERS requirement that you have to repay. You know, so it would take state legislation.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. And again, we're talking about pensions. There are things that can be done to reduce the unfunded liabilities. The defined contribution program idea is one, but we can pre-fund, we can create some kind of an account, like a trust fund, and start putting money away in there.
But that isn't what it says.
Well,
explore how introduction of defined contribution programs.
I thought it was an or. Sorry, never mind.
You know, no, you have to try and implement a defined contribution program. So I suggested that Jason and I meet our congressman, and that could be fraught with problem. Or, I mean, I'd be happy to do it. But, you know, we're going to face some.
You're going to be spending your wheels.
Yeah.
There are things we can do to start addressing our unfunded.
Our unfunded liability.
Right, and I think we need to start working on that a little bit. I would like to see that be a goal of the agency.
We do in our financial planning. We take...
Yeah, but we're not that aggressive with it. And, you know, pretty soon CalPERS is going to be, you know, raising rates, you know, eventually working towards what a...
Reducing the projected earnings, you know, that's
discount rate.
You know, one item that's going to be on the initial agenda for that finance committee meeting when we talk about the revenue planning is just the whole idea of setting up a separate trust fund to pre-fund for future unfunded liabilities for pensions.
Right.
And so we talked about that, and we have some thoughts. And in talking with Ken Spray, the Admin Service Manager, he said, you definitely do that, and it helps on your financial statements, because right now you have to report that unfunded liability, so you could have in the notes in your financial statements that you have so much in your PERS account that's funded at a certain level, then you have this separate trust account. He said, but from a PERS perspective, PERS isn't going to recognize that trust fund what you're funding, so PERS is going to look at your contributions to PERS, and you'll have a certain contribution level, and you're still going to have future unfunded liability. And part of the unfunded liability is that your employer rate is based on that. So we could have it fully funded with a trust fund, according to Ken, but we're still going to have, you know, whatever, you know, the employer contribution rate and then unfunded piece of that for what PERS considers is the funding level, because apparently they don't consider the trust fund funding.
Right, but that's a prepay thing, so you can deposit it with...
So we could pay down the unfunded liability with
CalPERS.
We can make additional payments to CalPERS, and that's definitely another option. But that would be something that, you know, we'd add to the next revenue plan to bring in some additional revenues to pay that down. There's different options to do it.
Yeah. But it's not all just CalPERS, because there's a medical...
That's OPEB. And that's kind of separate. We pre-fund that separately.
But we've got that kind of cover. Well, anyway, okay. All right.
We'll talk about that in a moment.
So you're beginning to explore.
Yeah.
As per Recommendation 8.
Right.
Well, no, Recommendation 8
is specific to defined contribution.
Yes, it's only talking about defined contribution programs.
Right. And you agree with the concept, but and then explain something. I think you've handled it brilliantly. So I move that we send to the grand jury whatever is the number, is it number 12, that we the agency responds to Marin Civil Grand Jury report the budget squeeze. I will Marin fund its public employee pensions.
Is there a second?
Second. Go for it. Your turn.
Let's give it to Dan.
Okay.
Michael was more insistent with his thumb. All in favor?
Aye.
I believe that was unanimous. Thank you. Moving on to 13.
Quick little question. So normally, so we'll have, you know, this document, then we have the grand jury's official report form we fill out, then we have a cover letter. I mean, I could sign that, or Chair first, you could sign that. Do you have a preference?
I don't have a preference. Do they have a requirement?
I don't believe so. I mean, I think I've signed these in the past. And the chair's signed in the past also. Sometimes we both sign them.
As long as there's no requirement that it be me, I'm happy
just
with it being you.
Attached is our responses to the grand jury.
As a former member of the civil grand jury, it's really nice when the agency shows respect. And so I would recommend that both of you sign it if it's not too inconvenient.
Okay.
Not a problem.
We'll sign it. Sure. Okay, great.
Let me know. I'll pop in and sign. Okay, 13. Agency responses to the Marin County Civil Grand Jury report, Marin's retirement health care benefits.
This was the second report that we received, and the ad hoc committee and I worked on preparation of these draft responses also. So some of these recommendations have been implemented. A lot of them are partially implemented. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, I think we're in a pretty good position with a lot of these. And the implementation pieces that we still need to look into are not very time-consuming or significant. The one that requires, you know, some board, you know, engagement is a development of a OPEB funding policy. That's essentially recommendation number one and two. So we thought that we could draft up, you know, a OPEB funding policy. And this could be something that's on the Finance Committee's, you know, agenda also. Is we could prepare a draft policy or a section of an OPEB funding section of an existing financial policy. We could bring that to the Finance Committee, you know, for them to review and consider. And then whatever their recommendation is, we could bring to the board. And our initial thought on that as staff is that we've been funding the annual required contribution since 2010. And we've included that in our budgets, and that's built into our 10-year financial program. So we can simply just state that in a financial policy. It's been our practice, but we haven't had, you know, a board official policy on that, even though there was board's decisions made in the past to do this.
Are we missing an opportunity to toot our own horn here a little bit with implementation or recommendation 9? I'm wondering if the last paragraph on the first page of the staff report that starts in 2010 shouldn't be copied into our response, and then the paragraph that goes over onto the next page.
Put it in our cover letter?
Well, yeah, maybe in our cover letter or in the response to recommendation 9.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
This has more detail in staff report. We could lift that and put it right
yeah,
into
just
the.
That. Yeah,
sure.
and put that in there because we're doing a good job.
Yeah, that's
well,
what
on the retiree health side, yeah, we are.
What
yeah.
was the one where we were lowest, just about lowest in the county?
It's got to be this
percent change, or is it dollar amount?
I think it was the OPEB.
I'm trying to find a graph on it. And here we go, Central Marine Sanitation Agency.
Which page is
yeah,
that?
We're one of the only agencies, well, a handful of the 40, that actually had more OPEB assets
yeah.
in a trust fund. Than we did when the grand jury did their last, you know, report on this topic.
Well, here's what it is. We have a. If you go to page 12 of 37 in their report, in this big long gizmo, 12 of 37, Central Marin's unfunded actuarial liability, unfunded, yeah. Decreased from, I don't know, 3.5 million to 2.5 million. Everybody else's just about went up.
Right, and maybe that's something I should input. So,
yep.
Good, tell them, remind them what a great job we did.
Okay.
So, with that suggestion.
That's a good idea with a cover letter.
Yeah, cover letter would be a great question.
So, put it in the cover letter instead of.
Yeah. And as shown on the graph on page 12 and blah, 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 2.
Yeah. Do a little self-aggrandizement there. Okay, with that suggestion, what are we doing here? We need to approve the draft agency response. I move that we approve the draft agency response to the grand jury's retirement health care benefits report as presented with edits and authorize staff to submit them to the grand jury foreperson and presiding judge.
Second.
Thank you. Any public comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I believe that was unanimous. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
14, Ross Valley Sanitary District Field Operations Base Evaluation.
Hey, Commissioner Borstein, do you want to talk about this at all, or do you want me to?
I'd like to start, and then we can chime in.
Okay. So, in the staff report, I kind of give a high-level summary of kind of the history of the Ross Valley District, where they have a large piece of property over off of Larkspur Landing Circle and Sir Francis Drake. There was a sub-regional treatment plant there historically that eventually was shut down when CMSA started operation. And a lot of it was demolished and, used as fill, in the site. And they used that land, as their base of operations and also their administrative offices. There were some buildings left on there. And then in 2006, Ross Valley approached us with this concept of them moving their operations to the CMSA Corporation Yard. So the board considered that. They thought that made sense. We looked at the feasibility of it. We hired a realtor who did an appraisal of the Corporation Yard, and we got, so many, dollars per square foot. We prepared a lease agreement, and then in 2007, Ross Valley, they spent about $500,000 doing utility improvements and bringing utilities out to that particular area in the Corporation Yard. They had a few modular buildings. They had a boardroom there. They had, a crew room, administrative offices. They had parking for their vehicles. We had a part of our employee parking lot. There used to be some landscaping there. That was removed for new parking stalls to be installed for Ross Valley's employees. We had maintenance, facility use procedures established. We had access protocols established. We had we shared a part-time administrative assistant, in the front office. And for 3 years, Ross Valley leased that property. Then they decided that they were going to move off-site, and they bought an administrative office in San Rafael. So a lot of their staff moved there. Most of their management staff, technical staff, administrative staff, finance staff. And then the field operations moved back to the Larkspur Landing property. So now Ross Valley is looking at potentially selling that land, and as part of those discussions, they've been talking about, where are they going to have their future fuel operations base? Either there, where they need to develop that land a little bit with, some pavement and some sidewalks and some buildings, things like that, or potentially coming back to CMSA and leasing a portion of our Corporation Yard like they did in the past. Although that would be, they wouldn't need quite as much land or facilities because that was for all of their operation in the past. Now this is just for the field operations. So I've had some discussions with their general manager about this a little bit, real positive. Some discussions with Commissioners Borstein and Gaffney. We actually walked out there and looked at the property. There wasn't too much to see except for some old trench lines, and a sewer manhole. But we've talked about it internally, and it's definitely feasible because we're not using most of that Corporation Yard. We don't have any plans in our CIP or strategic plan to use any of that. And looking into the future, there's only two things that we could possibly use that for. One would be, a very large recycled water facility, but there's no movement on that with the water district, and that would take years to identify the users to justify a facility like that. And then possibly new facilities to produce higher quality effluent to remove nutrients to meet, a future watershed permit requirement by the Regional Water Board. But that wouldn't be until well after 2022. So in the next, 7 to 10 years, we don't have any plans that we can project on now for the land. So it definitely seems feasible. So this is just, we'll bring this to the board because we talked about it a couple times in the past, most recently at the July meeting when in relation to the FY18 business plan, and the board said, well, we'll put on the agenda in September, we can talk about it. So staff's recommendation is just authorize us to, work with Ross Valley on doing the evaluation of what it would take for them to move here and what that would look like, what equipment would move here, how much space they would need, what would be a fair price, and then bring back, our findings to the board for future discussion. I attached the old 2007 lease agreement that has some little maps here of where those facilities were located and some of the access procedures, things like that, in the lease payment table.
So forgive my ignorance, but are these buildings are not still here, right? Were they temporary? Yeah,
those were temporary, so okay. Those were removed from the Lost Valley moved off site.
The parking spots are.
Those are still right? Here, yeah.
Okay. Where would the trucks be parked?
They'd be parked in the corporation yard around those buildings. But there probably would only be maybe two buildings. So that's one thing that I have to talk with their manager, Greg Norby, about is, you know, how many buildings, how much space would they need for just, you know, facilities, and how many vehicles they need to park. Because when you drive by the Larkspur landing site, there's a lot of vehicles out there.
Yeah.
But Greg says that they're not using some of those vehicles, and they'd probably kind of winnow down their fleet a little bit. That's what their plan is in the future.
Right. And I presume that the rent for the property will be some relationship to the sales price of the 10 acres by Country Mart.
we have to first clean that up, and there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. You know, we're operating out of a temporary space there. We have, you know, the guys are changing in a storage unit.
Well, we would be happy to help you out and have your employees be more comfortable, and we will keep a watchful eye on the sales price for that property.
Well, I would think that what we're requesting Jason to do is protect Central Marin's deep requirements. You know.
But co-location is a fine idea. We're 100% in favor of it, but we will be watching the sales price for that property.
You bet.
So this is a permanent home, then, we're really talking about?
You probably want a term.
I mean, what you described as sort of potential uses for this facility are still very potential, so I would be just very wary about making anything too permanent. On the flip side, putting corporation yards into anywhere in Marin County is very difficult to do.
Extremely valuable property.
And it's to get the zoning proper in any city, no one wants dirty, dusty sewer trucks in their pristine Marin County. So this is like one of the few corridors in Marin County that can house them, and property goes pretty quickly for that sort of use. So once, I think, they sell their property, they're never going to go back to Ross Valley area. And so as time goes on, the property gets more and more valuable for corporation yard use. And so, and then once we give it up, our expansion ability really diminishes quite.
That's true, yeah.
And so I just, in your study, you're advised to really look long and hard at the future potential uses that the agency would need for its treatment facilities.
Definitely.
Now, RVSD is going to be keeping its office building, correct?
Yeah, that's the plan so far.
And how much parking, is there parking around there for trucks?
Well, there's parking. Okay. It seems like there's parking for like maybe 20 cars, and it seems to be full all the time. People coming in, you know, for permits and things, and then all the employees there. So there's no space there for trucks.
Okay.
One of the lovely things, aside from it would be convenient and nice for our employees, is that we're doing the recycled water into our trucks that go out and clean our pipes. And if they were here, we would be able to easily accommodate that and use more of the recycled water,
right.
Which is good for everybody.
Now, when I first heard about this idea, you know, I thought it was a great idea, and of course we should start the conversation. But what I didn't realize until I read the packet is that there's actually, at least back in 07, there was sharing of equipment. Some of these machine shop type.
Yeah, we had some
maintenance shop.
Yeah, there was a provision so that way they could. There's a procedure to support it that they could notify our staff if they needed to come in and use the lathe or the drill press or some bench space. And they'd work with our supervisory staff and they could come in and they could utilize some of that. But that rarely happened. That rarely happened. I don't think it did happen during those years. I think at the same time, Ross and I, they rented a building out on Anderson Drive and they converted that to a shop.
So there's still a shop on Anderson? And would RVSD be keeping that?
Isn't that just storage?
No, we use that as a shop for our pumps.
Oh, that's okay.
That's where we do our pump maintenance.
Yeah, okay. And storage.
Some storage over there.
Because you know how it is, sharing equipment like that.
Yeah.
Inevitably, something breaks. Nobody wants to fess up.
Somebody can't find it.
Yeah. Something goes wrong. So I am a little leery of that.
Sure.
So I'd want to make sure that CMSA is protected.
Yeah, we've talked about that internally a little bit, some of our just planning meetings about for this topic. And that's definitely something I talked to Greg about, and we'd bring that back to the board, how we'd handle that.
Right.
But I think we definitely wouldn't let another agency have free access to our tools and equipment and shop space. We'd have to work out a procedure on how that happens, or maybe they would hire us to do machine work, on pumps and things. There's different options that we have to evaluate.
That is another thing we were thinking about, is that we have pump people, and I think there's more expertise here than what we have, and we could contract for our pump work.
It'd be convenient. Well, you can include that in your report back after you study this.
Yeah, definitely.
Good.
Sure.
Can I ask one question? Why Ross Valley doesn't want to keep their property there and just build a facility there?
I don't think Larkspur wants us there.
Number one. Number two, it's to park your trucks on probably the fanciest piece of open property in the Bay Area seems silly. I mean,
how'd you build a payoff? Okay.
Well, you'll never know until they
try
to sell it.
Yeah, exactly. Because we can probably get a lot.
True.
It's fairly valuable property.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Would any member of the public like to speak to this? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion to authorize the general manager to work with Ross Valley Sanitary on evaluating the feasibility of using a portion of the agency's corporation yard as the RVSD field operation space.
Great. Thanks. I'll let Greg go tomorrow.
Oh, there's
a second. I move that we consider authorizing the general manager to work with RVSD on evaluating the feasibility of utilizing a portion of agency's corporation yard as the RVSD field operation space.
Are the members of representatives of Ross Valley tending to vote on this?
Sure.
I mean, we're not authorizing anything other than Jason LaPlante authorizing back to us. I mean, we're not authorizing to do it.
Can't be on both sides of it. Where's Jack when we need him?
Somebody else do it then.
I don't think you guys can vote on this.
Then
I would ask about it.
Okay.
You can't be on both sides of a transaction.
There is no transaction.
We're just giving him. Okay, it's not a transaction.
There's no transaction.
Well, it's evaluating the feasibility. So it's a preliminary investigation that may very well lead to a transaction.
In which case, if it's inappropriate.
Everything we vote on affects our agencies, if you think about it.
But they're not on the other side. They're not.
This is a little too directly.
This is a little too direct.
Very specific.
I would draw the motion.
I'll move the recommendation.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Do you want us to abstain?
Any abstentions?
I have no problem. I abstain.
Okay.
I'll abstain.
Thank you.
I'll check in with Jack
tomorrow. Check with Jack about this,
What's proper and frowned at.
Thank you for doing that.
I know. I mean, if it comes back and it's not appropriate, I'll be the first one to say.
Okay, good.
If we all don't agree on it, we're not.
So maybe when it's a contract, then I would think. I don't know.
Well, we'll ask Jeff. There's an answer to this question.
We voted on sharing bond costs, you know, and we all voted on that, and every agency.
If we didn't vote on it, the entire board.
We'll ask Jack.
We'll ask Jack.
You know.
But thank you for your courtesy.
No. I mean, if there's later on, people over here who say,
let's ask legal counsel.
That's what we mean, Jack. Jack Covey.
We would certainly not want to move into a position of people being annoyed at us at the start.
We have done that before.
Okay. we don't like having other people annoyed at us.
I thought those responses from LAFCO were...
Okay, can we get to the agenda?
Yes.
Thank you.
We're done.
No. Agenda item 15, North Bay Watershed Association report.
You want
me to? We can do it jointly. You took copious notes. I watched it.
Okay. This will only take 20 minutes to watch.
Summarize them.
Just kidding.
Okay. 4 minutes.
Great meeting. You know, I sat next to Director Bornstein there, representing Ross Valley, and they're really the highlight of the meeting was two presentations. One was a presentation from a fellow Rob Carson with the County of Marin, probably from their stormwater division, and he talked about the State Water Board is preparing amendments to the Phase 2 stormwater permits, and in that. On stormwater systems for what they call priority land, designated land areas that are commercial, industrial, or high density, that trash greater than 5 millimeters can't be discharged into the storm drain. So that's kind of what the regulation says.
It's the size of a cigarette butt.
And these amendments to this permit will be wrapped up in 2019, and then local agencies have until 2030 to come into compliance. And there's two different tracks. One is just installing devices to prevent the trash from getting in, and that includes and a lot of that trash is also just leaves and organic material. And the Water Board estimated that would cost $8 per person per year. So for Marin, it'd be $20 million, but that doesn't include O&M costs. And that's a lot having to clean those out, every so often.
What does it include if it doesn't include O&M costs?
I think it's just the procurement to the screen system and installation of it.
Oh, okay.
Then there's a second track, which most of the cities and the county have selected, and that's to look at equivalent actions to installing rural devices. So that could include, he didn't really get into a lot of the details, but pollution prevention, education, things like that. And part of this track, too, that they're working on that was part of this study was... looking at all the different parcels of land within these priority development areas and determining how much trash is generated. And it was all color-coded. Then they actually went out in the field to these different areas. They looked at downtown San Rafael. So people from the county went out there, probably met some city staff, and they looked at these different areas just to, what do you call it, land truth? What was the word you used?
Ground truth.
Ground truth, just to check to see if it has that much trash density or not. And they had descriptions of how much the density is and some picture examples of it. That was pretty interesting. He did reference one item under track two would be a program similar to the San Rafael Downtown Streets Team. Mm. He talked about that quite a bit and how successful that was. Mm-hmm. So it was a great presentation. But Michael, anything else?
I asked about that pulls out the solid waste, but what about all the waste that you can't trap just before it runs out, all the chemicals, first rain that happens. And his response to that was pretty much, as in number two, if you really keep the streets sweeped and you clean them all the time, that actually gets a lot of the stuff from getting into the system to begin with.
That was interesting. Sorry, I have 1 minute left.
I'm really concerned about that, though, because my town is susceptible to flooding, and you put those screens up, even though during the storms we run staff, and we have our street cleaner going pretty much 24/7 during storm events. you can't keep up with the leaf debris, especially in fall.
Well, it's not so only before difficult. It gets into the system that it talked about five or six different methods once it's in the system before it goes out into the waterways of catching
That's
it.
Incredibly expensive to install huge new infrastructure.
They talked about that.
Yeah,
that's why a lot of the different places are talking about track number two versus installing the stuff.
Thank you. Interesting.
The second discussion was a joint presentation from the Sonoma County Resource Conservation District, and they partnered with the San Francisco Estuary Institute to develop a Petaluma Historic Hydrology Study. And they did a bunch of research, and they went to like UC libraries, and they got photographs and maps and even various writings, you know, from these different, you know, from museums and from libraries and other sources, so they could reconstruct what the whole Petaluma watershed looked like prior to development, like in the 1830s and 40s. So they talked about all the research they did and how they constructed it and how there were, you know, wetlands in certain areas, and the Petaluma River was, you know, really, you know, meandering, and there were mud flats in areas and vernal pools and all kinds of other, you know, wetland features. I didn't know what it was. But then he talked about then how it was developed in Petaluma, in a lot of, and how they compared today's watershed compared to, you know, the 1830s watershed, and it was vastly different. So like they straightened the Petaluma River in sections to aid with navigation. They diked, you know, around the bay and the river in areas for agriculture. That there are a lot of the mud flats and the vernal pools are gone. A lot of the streams, you know, have been rerouted and diverted. And what were some of the metrics? 68% of the wetlands were lost in Petaluma, and 95% of the non-tidal wetlands, they said. So the intent of doing this is then the Resource Conservation District then can look for some potential projects for restoring areas in the watershed. That was I learned a lot at this meeting. It was really, really interesting.
It was amazing to me that they actually really rerouted the Petaluma River a lot. It used to be like Oxbow in Napa. Yeah. But they said, and just zipped it straight up.
Yeah. That's it.
Thank you.
Was that the meeting where the measure?
No.
Okay, that was
no, that was one we just had last week.
Okay, agenda item 16. Oh, anybody, member of the public want to comment? Okay. 16, oral reports by commissioners, general manager.
Mine's written here for you guys. If
you
have any questions on that, I could answer them.
Did you want to mention the LACNO?
Well, you know, where did I see the responses, LACNO responses? Is that somewhere?
In the blue packet, the informational item.
It's the blue packet.
I-1.
And I didn't like the responses.
I didn't even realize that there were responses, so when I saw this, I looked up online for the responses to SD2, and they weren't any better.
They didn't justify it.
They clearly didn't agree with our comments to them. They took great defense in their in sticking with their comments, and I thought it was pretty uninviting to even ask us to give them responses or comments.
You know, we've sent them.
They're not going to even recognize them and acknowledge them. They did change accommodating from influencing to accommodating in that whole section on we have power to influence. That was about the only thing they did.
Well, we could run them out of town.
Oh, well, we already did.
Evidently, Mike, that was referring to Kane Simmons has left Marin LACNO.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yes. As of like today.
Oh,
yeah. According to...
He was hired by San Diego County LACNO.
All right. Okay. What was since you worked with them on this report, from the very beginning, what was their spirit of and your interaction to help shape it, and or did they just sort of put you in the back room and say, "Yeah, we heard you, and we're going to write it the way we want"?
Well, the first thing is they asked for just a significant amount of information from the agency, you know, which we provided. That took a lot of time and effort to gather all the information they wanted. They did form an advisory committee, and that actually came to the board with that request, and you approved that and be serving on it. But the advisory committee didn't really do too much. We had a few meetings, but, you know, they weren't as productive as we were hoping. And got along with Keene really well. You know, he was always, you know, responsive, and we talked, and I sat down with him, you know, separately and reviewed some of our primary, you know, concerns about, you know, how they're referring to capacity, not looking at, you know, peak capacities and, you know, hourly peaks, because we looked at daily peaks, which are a lot less than real capacity needs. Talked about the depreciation and that is not a real cash expense, and it shouldn't be used in a lot of the financial metrics, and he agreed with that and some other things. But, I mean, so I got along with them pretty well. I was a little surprised that they didn't, you know, accept some of our comments and integrate those into the report. I think it was a timing issue. I think they had a schedule that had to go before. They had told the LAFCO commission it was going to be before them on this date. They extended our comment, you know, a deadline, you know, by a month or so. But then, like, we sent the comment letter, but then we sent the whole agency profile with a lot of, you know, handwritten comments. And I write pretty sloppy, but I write really nice handwriting on those comments too. And they didn't include any of the handwritten comments into the final document.
So who was driving it? What?
Well, you know, the admin, not the admin assistant, but, you know, I forget, the analyst, Rachel, did most of the work, I think, on it. Now she was appointed as interim executive director when Keene left.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wow.
But she, we got along with her pretty well, too, but they just didn't consider our comments as we should be. So, you know, like we talked before, you know, we're in the utility industry. We have, you know, we have the education that got us here, and we've got all these years of experience between all the managers, and we have a, you know, pretty good idea on how we're supposed to do our business. And, you know, this was an important assignment for them, but they're, you know, they have more of a administrative and planning background. So we were hoping that they would really utilize the, you know, all our expertise at the advisory committee level to help them make sure that that study was accurate based on facts and science as possible. And that, you know, some of that didn't happen.
So they're ABAG?
LAFCO.
No, but they're acting like ABAG. Oh. You know, a central planner that wants to tell you how to do your business because they know better.
Well,
I'd say yes to that.
Okay. All right, well, that is an interesting and really disappointing development.
Well, with item comment 7-7, they sort of just said this is a macro-level review, and if we can go forward with a micro-level review now if we want to. And
That makes no sense, does it?
No. When it comes to capacity, that's a report lie. It would be my opinion, and be done with it with LAFCO.
Yeah, we were hoping that they would be part of the solution, but they are probably not going to be. Alrighty.
Okay. Anything else, JC?
No, that's it.
Okay. Oh, I thought the letter that you included with the informational items, the very last page,
which one?
Was kind of worth a read. It was a letter that was evidently somewhere down on the peninsula, right?
Oh, yes.
Sam.
Yes, Sam.
Sam.
Over in St. Missy and Mid-Coastside.
Editorial.
I know the manager pretty well down there.
Yeah. Anyway. Worth a read if you didn't get to it.
Yeah, the sewer agency.
And you got a FEMA award of emergency funds.
Yeah, we're excited about that hillside stabilization storm. So that's been approved. So we'll get you know, the $37,000 that we paid, you know, during July to do all the stabilization work. And they also looked at another group from FEMA came out, and they looked at the actual hillsides themselves, and they verbally said, yeah, that definitely qualifies for, you know, design and construction FEMA funds too. So we fill out, it's amazing how many different forms you fill out, you know, with FEMA. And they all kind of look the same too. They say the same thing. But it was all good, so I was happy to to report that.
Excellent.
So once we actually receive some money, I'll let you know, too.
Yeah, hoover up that free money. We're all about that.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe Ross Valley can move up there on the hill.
That'll be a lower lease cost in the corporation yard.
You know that SAM is an agency of an example who have allocated their capacity of the treatment plant, which was one of the recommendations of LAFCO.
That's right.
And it means every facility financing has to be approved by three agencies, and they've got to come up with their share of the money. And it's impossible. And so the Joint Powers Agency has no power by itself to control the facilities. It's the exact opposite of what we do here and the exact opposite of what works.
But what we were hoping to expand.
It was one of those examples that I was telling you about.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
It's an impossible way to run a JPA.
Next scheduled meeting, Tuesday, October 10th at 7 p.m. See you all then. Meeting adjourned.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, good. Good.